Welcome to the Blacklands Cafe. My name's John Mark Dempsey. Have a cup of coffee on the house. It's Thursday, September 19th, 2013. And on our calendar today, in 1881, President James Garfield died after being shot by an assassin more than 2 months earlier in a Washington, D.C. railroad station. On this day in 1942, Del Valle Army Base opened. It was later renamed Bergstrom Air Force Base and is now the site of the Austin-Bergstrom International Airport. On this day in 1957, the first underground test of a nuclear bomb took place in the Nevada desert, about 65 miles north of Las Vegas.
As dawn breaks over Nevada, the 1957 atomic test series begins. The test followed a 12-day wait for weather conditions which would keep fallout at a minimum and scored a complete success.
In 1959, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev, on a tour of the U.S., was denied being allowed to visit Disneyland. But Khrushchev did get to attend a Hollywood luncheon in his honor with Marilyn Monroe in attendance.
Soviet Premier Khrushchev meets the masters of moviedom at a studio luncheon on the 20th Century Fox lot in Hollywood. A meeting at which Mr. K gives himself quite a build-up. Jack Benny is among the famous film stars present. Frank Sinatra, who later entertains Mrs. Khrushchev on the set of Can Can, and recent Academy Award winner David Niven. Marilyn Monroe, quite an attractive attraction herself.
On this day in 1985, a massive earthquake hit Mexico City, killing more than 10,000 people. In 1965, the number one song in America predicted massive death and destruction, but of the man-made variety, Eve of Destruction by Barry McGuire.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
On the KETR events calendar this coming weekend is the annual Rally Round Greenville event in downtown Greenville. As usual, the barbecue cook-off, sponsored by Alliance Bank, will be one of the major events, as well as many other exciting events for the entire family. Again, this year, Emerald City Band will be rocking downtown Greenville at 8 o'clock on Friday night. And then Jack Ingram will be on the Bud Light stage on Saturday night at 10. Rally Round Greenville in downtown Greenville this coming weekend, Friday and Saturday. Our guest in the cafe this morning is Hunt County Historical Commission Director Carol Taylor. Carol, director is the right?
Chairman.
And we're going to have her as a regular guest on our program, and of course football season is underway, high school football and college football, and we're going to talk with her a little bit about the history of Greenville football this morning. And in particular, first of all, we're going to talk about the original colors for the Greenville Lions, the uniforms they wore, which you might imagine have always been red and white, but weren't always. So tell us that story.
Well, several years ago, I was digging through an old shed and found part of a letter sweater that was had a white G and a green fabric. It was a dark hunter green. Mm-hmm. And I know that there was a baseball team, semi-pro.
It was a minor league team,
minor league. Okay. That were known as the Greenville Hunters. Mm-hmm. And it had to be because of the colors, because there were no horses and hunting and all that kind of stuff in Hunt County at that time. With the advent of World War I in 1917, the United States took all green fabric dye to use in the uniforms. So the school found themselves with no more green uniforms. So they went to the red and white, I think. I haven't gotten all of that, but I do know that about 1919, before the University Interscholastic League organization was created, school football was in high schools were just kind of whatever.
Right.
You played whoever you wanted to play and thought you could get a crowd. And so Greenville supposedly won the state championship in 1919. It's not official now because, you know, the rule it's not in the rule book.
Yeah, it wasn't part of the UIL.
Right.
At that time, yeah. Now, but we think that but not only the Greenville Hunters baseball team, but also the Greenville High School, still the Lions.
I don't know. I have heard that they were at one time called the Thunderheads.
Now, that I've not heard. And we're quite sure that they wore green. Greenville High School wore green.
Right.
Dark green.
Dark green.
I have read that in several different sources as well. And then World War One comes along, a need for green dye. We can't be green
anymore. And we never went back to green.
Yeah. You were also telling me about, and I've heard this story before. This was under Henry Franca, the mismatched uniforms that they wore.
Right. There is a picture, and I think it's a pen and ink or a watercolor at the museum, and it shows these football players, and instead of having a jersey that's completely the same on both sides, it's split right down the middle. There will be one design on the right. The man he lined up with beside has the same design on his left shirt. So the team, the linemen across the line from them are supposedly thoroughly confused.
And this, the same thing was done with the legs, I believe.
Yes. The pants had different colors on your legs. And your right leg matched your neighbor's left leg, and your left leg met the other.
So a lineman across the line would see two red legs, but one would be on the leg of one player, and the other red leg was the leg of another player.
Right.
Imagine how
right
confusing that would be. I wonder if there's a rule against that now. I'll bet there's a rule.
I bet there is.
Yeah.
You know, there were several things that Franca did that were controversial.
Yeah. But he was very, very successful. Coach Henry Franca, F-R-N-K-A. And then he went on to be a very successful college coach at the University of Tulsa.
At Tulsa, and then he was at
Tulane. That's right.
Unfortunately, when he was at Tulsa, his son was playing football. He had already gone to Tulane. His wife was going to stay while till their son graduated, and he died of a head injury.
Mm. A football injury?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some respects, football injuries were less common in those days than they
right.
are now. The players were not as big and strong and as fast, and the injuries were less. But you did have, of course, Teddy Roosevelt threatened to ban college football at one time because of all the injuries
right.
and even deaths. We're going to run out of time here to talk about all the things that we intended to, but you were telling me that you're working right now on a new history of Greenville?
I am. I have... It will be published through the East Texas Historical Association. I'm going to start it about 1840 and take it all the way through to the beginning of the 20th century. There's a lot of interesting things, and Greenville changed dramatically from the first day the sale of lots was made till 1899.
Carol Taylor is the chairman of the Hunt County Historical Commission. You also read her columns in the Greenville
right.
Herald Banner every Sunday. And she's going to be a regular guest with us here on KETR. Thanks for having a cup of coffee with us.
Well, you're most welcome.
Carol Taylor, you're starting the day with Morning Edition on your station, 88.9 KETR.